time is 10 minutes past the hour of 8. Joining us in studio, Adam Pantanowitz. Adam, a very, very good morning to you.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you for being here. You're a lecturer at WITS. You've just joined the Singularity University faculty. So well done to you on that.
Thank you so much. It's been a lot of fun.
That is absolutely amazing. And your field of expertise, your field of reference is?
So my frame of reference is that I'm a biomedical and electrical engineer.
Right.
I studied at WITS University.
Right.
I basically have a broad understanding of engineering, good understanding of these specific fields. And then I've had experience in computing after university. I started to work mostly in computing and software development.
Right.
In both in bioengineering and in software development, but with a large focus on computing. And I'm just really interested in general tech and tech trends.
And where we're going.
And where we're going.
So you and I were having a coffee the other day, and we got into this whole discussion, which is how this this little segment came about, because it's with the advent of with the exponential growth of innovation, with innovation moving forward at the speed that it's going, that it's moving at. Along with it are a number of very, very serious ethical issues that keep cropping up. A very, very simple one, for example, would be if you're programming a driverless car, you've got to, and an old lady is crossing the road, a young child is on the one side and a cat on the other, you've got to program this car because the car's not going to make its own decision. It's got to be like a person, as a person would. You've got to tell this car now go for the old lady, the cat, or the young child in order to protect the passenger in the car, for example. Or don't protect the passenger in the car because there's nobody in the car. Whatever it would be. They're all of these really significant challenges. We've seen with the explosion of Facebook, some of the challenges that they've had with regard to privacy. We're seeing WhatsApp now trying to curtail the power of their own platform because of fake news. It's everywhere. We're seeing medical aid companies that are opening banks that have life insurance angles, that have short-term insurance angles, and they've got to figure out ethically how information is shared, how data is kept private. It's a very complex issue. Help us.
No doubt about it. I mean, it is immensely complex, and the questions you pose are questions that are right now at the forefront of our minds. We're in uncharted territory.
Mm.
You make reference at the beginning of what you said to the speed at which things are advancing, and I think it's important that we do that justice but in order to start, just to get a
right.
sense of,
okay, good.
Of the state in which, you know, the frame, I think we refer to this thing called an inertial reference frame. It's how you're, it's the frame in which you're moving. It's a principle from physics. The inertial reference frame really tells you, you know, it's your reference frame, where you're starting from, what your position is, what your momentum is.
Right.
So at the moment, we're going into real uncharted territory, and that the exponential advancement in technology is changing at such a rapid rate that I don't think we've yet experienced anything like it. And we're going to say in a year, we haven't experienced anything like this yet.
Right.
And a year later, it will be much more rapid.
Because the technology it allows for growth. As we're developing it, it's almost, it's compounded.
Exactly. It's compounded. It's integrated.
Right.
You find a certain discipline that has advanced that starts affecting another discipline.
Correct.
So there's this connection between disciplines that bootstraps it and makes it much more rapid. So it truly is exponential. The very rate of change is going to change. And we generally think linearly. We think about, you know, throwing a ball and it goes in a linear trajectory. We can't really imagine what that's going to feel like. So we're facing these unbelievable questions now. But going forward, we're going to be facing questions at a much faster rate. So one has to consider that the only way that we're going to cope with this kind of change is to have, you know, solid foundation in terms of our principles. But as humanity, we haven't been able to find much consensus on that so far. And we've had a lot of opportunity to do so. As we go forward.
Right, there's no basic standard for ethics.
There's no
outside of the technology world. We don't even really know on what basis this is to be established.
Absolutely, and especially within the technology world. You know, we mentioned Facebook in particular and some other interesting examples that you mentioned. And I think Facebook has found itself in a very difficult position because of decisions that they've made in order to really get their company to be such a valuable company. Now, those decisions have certainly compromised the privacy of individuals. And that compromised privacy is something that we've largely opted into. You know, we've decided to do so. And that framework of ethics is something that's currently very topical. But I think there are vast implications for instance, the medical field, where we now have a reluctance to potentially share information. In the medical field, if information is shared very responsibly, can be incredibly useful for all other people because we can learn from large data sets, for example. So this is really a minefield that is uncharted. We're in new times. We're in new interesting waters.
So, I mean, is this something that most people, I mean, you're involved quite a lot in the academic, on the academic side of it. So I would imagine that there's a focus there trying to understand and deal with these issues. But many people, and especially those who are involved in a startup, have less time for, really, drilling down into the ethical aspects of the company. They're just trying to survive and trying to make their company work. I got the sense that last year when this whole Facebook data breach happened, that they hadn't, it was, a lot of it was simply just that they weren't prepared for the amount of information that they would have. Maybe I'm judging them too favorably.
I think it's interesting what you say. So, I mean, startups certainly... let me start off with the thoughts around academia. I think that there is a disconnect at the moment between looking at how much of an influence tech has in our society and the governance and consideration that attracts. Okay. So we aren't necessarily spending enough time considering these issues and preparing ourselves for the future because it's so difficult to define. We can look into the past and learn our lessons from the past. But when we project
we can't define what we don't know.
We can't define what we don't know, and we speak about these potential or possible futures.
Right. In 1960, you couldn't have had an ethical discussion about, you know, whether somebody should talk on their mobile phone in a restaurant because it wasn't a concept that was understood.
Absolutely. And we're in a similar position now. So if we look at the trajectory of, for instance, Facebook certainly may not have understood initially what they were up to. I mean, there's a famous infamous Mark Zuckerberg quote around his early days, and he just couldn't believe, he stated in disbelief that people were just blindly handing over their privacy to him and their private information to him and what power he had started to gain. So he was well aware of it, and I think that the prevailing view is that in the tech community, certainly the things that I've heard is that there has been a bad actor there that has done damage in tech.
Right.
But that is an opinion. And I think then from a startup's perspective, it's so hard for a startup to consider these sorts of things. There is no real ethical framework in which one is operating. One is often developing new things that don't currently exist. And so it's really up to those individuals to consider what the implications are, what they're creating from a society perspective. What they're doing socioeconomically, what they're doing to the environment.
A lot of it, though, does come down back to protection of information in the tech space, because that's often the advantage. We can take a look at this big data, and we can try and figure out what this means. As you say, in the medical profession, maybe you don't need to go for a blood test because of your information, you know, there's a way in which your body's most likely to react given your weight, height, genetics, etc. I don't know. There's a lot of different ways, information sharing between companies in terms of your medical records. All of this, we're becoming more fascinated by DNA testing and genetics, and, you know, famous people in America are 1/100 of 1/6 Native American now, and we don't even know if that means anything. We don't know what to do with this information. There was a Mexican airline last week that put out an advert saying, if you have Aeromexico said, if you're an American and you fly into Mexico and you have a certain amount of DNA that is Mexican, you'll get that as a discount. Like, we don't know where we are. The world is just completely flummoxed by this amount of stuff that's coming our way. Don't we need to go back to basic principles?
I think we are utterly inundated with information. And this information is largely very powerful. You know, the information that we get, the data that we obtain, can be used in various ways to actually work out what's going to happen, work out elements of the future. There's immense power in that. And there's therefore responsibility in having that data. And I think a lot of the movement in the last few years has been towards decentralizing databases to try and take data and put it into a variety of people's hands, or alternatively to distribute power away from a central organization. Now, business doesn't yet understand this. We don't yet know how that's going to impact all of business and whether or not it will take off as a mechanism or a way of storing data in the future. But that's certainly one way that people are trying to cope with this changing world where there's centralization of power. You mentioned DNA, for instance, and I think DNA is one of those fascinating areas where we get this massive data about a person. And there's this unbelievable artist that I heard about in New York. And this artist went around, she collected cigarette butts, and from those cigarette butts, she would actually go and sequence a stranger's DNA. She would sequence a stranger's DNA and present it in a beautiful little box with a little disc which contained all the DNA of that person, the original cigarette butt, and a reconstruction or a projection of what the person looked like as a little photo at their age.
Wow. Isn't that incredible?
It's incredible. So it was an estimate from the DNA, a projection of what the person would look like. And effectively, this piece of what was referred to as art, which is really a statement on privacy.
Absolutely.
I mean, your DNA is your most kind of intimate thing. Right. The information
it creates. I guess legally he or she have thrown the butt away, the cigarette butt away. So they've discarded it. But that's incredible. It is definitely crossing a line.
It is. And it brings to question all of these thoughts about what is privacy, and does privacy actually really fundamentally exist?
Does it exist? I mean, that's the other question. And we always have this discussion about testing, drug testing at the Olympics, an unfair advantage. My view is completely different. I say, you know, do away with drug testing. Everyone should drop dead at the end of a race. Well, so be it. It's your choice. But, to some extent, maybe that's an attitude here. Maybe we just don't have any privacy with regard to some of our stuff. Obviously, certain things have to be, but I guess then the question is where you draw the line. It's 8:22. I'd love your thoughts on it. 345-190 or 061-895-1019. I am chatting to Adam Pantanovitz. He is a lecturer at WITS. He is on the faculty of Singularity University. He's a biomedical engineer and an electrical engineer, very involved in the world of technology and trying to figure this out, where our world is going. It's a very, very scary place. It is perhaps very, very overwhelming, but fascinating nevertheless. We are on the ride, and we are going, we are on the ride, so we might as well try and make sense of it and enjoy the magnificence of what can be achieved with the technology, because it's not all bad news. There's a lot of amazing innovation happening. That's the exciting thing about the era that we're living in.
Absolutely, and I often remark on this tendency that we have as humans to amplify the negative. Because it's almost a survival instinct that we have. You know, it's much more important to know if there's an impending danger than to know that somewhere someone's done something great that is not a danger. So I think that we underestimate just how wonderful and amazing our future can be with tech. And with the right kind of tech, the right kind of responsible technology being created, I think that we put ourselves into an unbelievably better net position as humanity. We're looking at a future that we can talk about for hours around, you know, there's this theory of abundance where there are no constraints in terms of energy, for instance, or no constraints in terms of food availability. Food availability is then completely democratized for everyone. And there are potential futures that we can build toward, which are not these dark dystopian futures that seem to kind of invade our psyche as humans, seem to dominate the narrative. And we need to, and certainly it is the endeavor of Singularity University to look at that and say, at Singularity we speak about great possible futures because we look forward at what's happening currently. We extrapolate that And things look, really look great.
What's interesting to me, I mentioned it on the show last week. I don't know if anyone recalls this or happened to have been listening at that time. But one of the fascinating things about the disaster and the Rohingya Muslim disaster that took place is what they saw when thousands of people were fleeing from their villages and from their areas. What they actually took with them wasn't jewelry and gold and things like that that refugees in the past would have, but in fact big solar panels that they had tied to their back, because these solar panels would give them would provide them with some form of energy. And today energy powers technology and technology is life. So you see a very, very real shift in our value system and what we value. I think that any kid or any teenager you ask today, what they would sacrifice as a, you know, on a scale, I think that, their cell phone would come after their families and parents specifically.
So I agree with you. And I think the situation with the movement of solar panels in such tragic circumstances is, it's actually quite intriguing that this energy is sort of a fundamental currency, not just a currency, but it's a fundamental utility now, not just of economy, but of our daily lives, not just of driving our economy and growing our economy. And it's such an important component of economy. We know the link between energy and the growth of economy. But you pose an interesting question, and that's if there's a burning building and, you know, you have all your things inside the burning building, the question is often posed about what does one go and recover? What does one go and retrieve if you're able to save one thing? And nowadays, I would never say photographs. Certainly in the past I would, but now all of my photographs are in my iCloud Drive. Right. So I absolutely have a record of that.
Right.
So the times have certainly changed dramatically in terms of what is possible digitally. And your representation of your life in a digital world means that you probably just want to save that connection to digital.
Time is 8:27. We're going to take some ads. We're going to take news headlines. I am chatting to Adam Pantanovitz. Join us in our conversation, 34519 or 0618951019. Adam, what do you think the biggest challenges are with the exponential growth in technology?
I think we don't even know yet. I mean, I think right now, projecting forward, we don't yet know what the world is going to look like at all. It's going to be utterly transformative. One of the bigger challenges that we think is going to occur is what happens to work. And that's very topical right now. What is the future of jobs? I think to a large extent, privacy has already been almost dealt with socially, and we have to come up with learnings from the past to find a better future. But the future of jobs is
And who are we as well? Because are we, you know, if I write something on Facebook outside of work that is deemed unacceptable by my employer, do they have a right to fire me? Presuming I haven't broken any laws. It's very complicated.
It is very complicated. We don't have the legal frameworks. In some cases, we don't even have the language to yet understand and experience the future.
Yeah.
One example that I think is going to be very interesting, and, you know, we talk about work and jobs and the future of jobs, and we can delve into that topic, but a lot of the work that I've been doing at WITS is in the field of human-computer interfaces. So we look at how to connect humans up to computers, better ways for disabled people to interface with a computer if they're unable to use their limbs, for instance. But the field of human-computer interfaces has started to become something a bit more, where we expect at a certain point in time there'll be brain implants that will connect us to a network. So those brain implants will create Internet of Things nodes of us. Of course, we are not things, but we will become sort of devices on a big network. And this is so uncharted and so unbelievable.
It's so scary.
And so potentially scary that we don't yet have that ethical framework to navigate it. But it can also be so immeasurably powerful for us and so transformative that it is an intriguing frontier. Now, should we be probing around in these frontiers is often something that when I'm doing a talk, for instance, I get asked. Some people say to me,
yeah, shouldn't we leave some things the hell alone?
Absolutely. And, you know, people have responded in with either fear or great intrigue and interest.
Right.
And on the anxiety side, people often say to me, you know, what about religion and what about the soul? And come from that, their frame of reference to challenge this frontier. And what inevitably seems to happen with tech is that when the tech ripens or becomes ready for something, there will be some nation that does it. There will be someone that decides to push the frontier forward. So how do we figure and navigate this world in a responsible way when that is the world that we're faced with? We are faced with the fact that if we don't push that frontier forward, someone else is going to,
so we might as well have some ground rules.
And we saw it in China recently with the designer baby story, which is the story of these two twins that were born with modified DNA, where the DNA was selected for in a particular context to prevent HIV infection. Right. And this raises immense ethical concerns. The whole world was engaged in this conversation.
Because we know on some level that's where it's going.
We do.
You know, is it acceptable if you're having IVF to choose the sex of your baby? Well, if it is, then what's the difference if you choose them to have blonde hair and blue eyes?
And you can go a bit further to say, what about, you know, a sports advantage? And it loops back to that idea around doping in sports. There's something around that we have to delve into. There's something very intriguing about that.
You see, and I think we've had the privilege for many, many years of deciding that we don't want to engage in certain subjects. But what this technology is doing on many levels is forcing us to do so. What do I feel about having a chip in my arm or in my brain that's going to allow me to tap my hand against a thing and pay for something, you know, because it's convenient, but, you know, where does that lead to ultimately? You know, we're going to have to figure this out.
I agree. We have to start having these conversations now.
And we are going to have these conversations. We're going to have this conversation next week, Tuesday, at a similar time. Adam's going to join me for a few weeks. We're going to start delving into some of the specifics around ethics and technology. If there's anything specifically that you do want to want us to discuss, please let me know. 34519 or 061-895-1019. I'd love your thoughts on it. Time's 8:38, about to go 8:39. Adam Pantanovitz, thank you for joining us. A very, very interesting and an extremely eye-opening conversation. Looking forward to having many more.
Thank you very much.